Baruch Hashem. Okay, I think we're on together. Ladies and gentlemen, we are continuing in the series on Halacha Engages Modernity, and it's per popular request, the first particular topic that we've taken on, starting from the middle of the shiur last week, is that of assisted reproduction. And we started discussing, based upon, actually, today's parasha, the story of the miracle that transpired with respect to the birth of Dina and the birth of Yosef. It's not completely clear what exactly the miracle was. Rashi in this week's parasha says that Dina started off as a boy and became into a girl. That's Rashi's version. And he mentioned the Targum Yonasan in this week's parasha says no, there was a switch in utero, that was the fetus moved from Rachel to Leah, from Leah to Rachel, and we read from the Mazel last Motzei Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, first day Shacharis. We all are saying this without maybe realizing it for the last many years, but that's how the Targum Yerushalmi's version has found its way into our Mazel. This is relevant for a Rashi in Parshas Vayigash, Shol Ben Aknanis, where Rashi there seems to tell us from Chazal that Shimon married Dina. It's an obvious question: how could Shimon marry Dina if even Bnei Noach were not permitted to marry their own full sisters? If, however, one assumes that perhaps even though Dina came out from Leah, but she started off with Rachel, not a full sister, that would explain that position of Rashi. So, and I told you last time to give a definitive answer, I believe, has to wait till the Mashiach. Apparently, I have to assume that they're the same age. I can't, you look in the Me'amel always. It gives you exactly when everybody was born. It gives you their birthday. It gives you everything. So there you'll find out precisely the birthdays of these two great individuals. We used to have a set here. Me'amel always, either the Hebrew or the English. That's where you'll find this discussed, the precise birthdays. And in the Pesukim, it sounds like they're coming one after the other. So they could have had the same birthday for within a short period of time, in any event. So that was the discussion last time from the perspective of Agoda. I mentioned to you then that for those who wanted to research it, there was a beautiful article about it by Rabbi Bleich Shalita in his Contemporary Halach Problems, Volume 4. And just for those who, since I saw that I left the book here last Motzei Shabbos, I found it as I left it, so I'm not sure how many people read it in the interim. But for those who want to see, it's called over here In Vitro Fertilization, Maternal Identity and Conversion. This is a 36-page article. We mentioned number 36 this morning, so in a different context. So this is a 36-page article from 237 to 273. And if those who know by Bleich's style, he goes through things very, very meticulously, citing chapter and verse and proofs here and there and everywhere. And we're going to be discussing a fairly short version of some of the things that Rabbi Bleich advances in his much more lengthy and erudite presentation, which again, after I finish tonight, you can still borrow the book. And just give it back when you finish. It's a very, very wonderful, wonderful book. Many wonderful things here, but this is what we're focusing on today. And today we're going to be discussing it from the perspective of a more rigorous halachic analysis, even any agaritas. There's much to be discussed with here, which is, I'll call it inexact halacha. People try to bring proofs from the halachas with respect to inbreeding of different vegetables, vegetations. They try to make analogies from grafting one vegetable onto another, and how does it affect the human. I'm loath to go that way. I want to stick with human beings, because once you start getting extrapolated from vegetables, you lost me in the process, and it's just too complex for me. But there is a discussion about that, and as a matter of fact, one of my chavrusas from a long, long time ago, Rabbi Ezra Bick, who was a Rebbe now in Gush for many, many years, he was one of the first writers on this topic, and he also went with this kind of a analogy to certain these kinds of vegetable kingdom as opposed to the human kingdom. And he would have a whole argument with this one, and then Zalman the Chemi Goldberg got involved. I mean, it's an argument of Shem Shemaim. I was trying to prove a point. But we're going to focus on two Talmudic texts, both in Masechta Yevamos, and I made copies here in a manner which should be understandable to everybody, so please look at the sheets that we gave out. Okay, so we're going to start with the first source, which is the one that's quoted by most authorities, which comes from Yevamos Tzadi Ches Amad Aleph. We'll read together. It emerges from the Braisa that brothers whose mother converted after they were conceived, we sometimes call this a shotgun conversion. Someone, you know, they heard of a shotgun marriage. This is a shotgun conversion. That someone is pregnant and wants the children to be born Jewish, so they convert while they are pregnant. But before they were born, are deemed, even by biblical law, to be related to their mother, and through their mother, to each other. Footnote 2. This is clear from the Bryce's ruling that they are liable upon pain of kores for marrying each other's wives. Now, kores is only by din what we call midaraisa. It's not the kores midarabanim. So these two brothers who were born when their mother converted while she was pregnant with them are considered by Torah law to be related through their mother. Nevertheless, since they were conceived not in sanctity, that's called harasa shelo b'kedusha, before the mother converted, they are not related to their father and are not considered paternal brothers. Number 3, this is clear from the Bryce's ruling, they are not subject to the laws of Yibam and Chalitza. Understand? Because when their father fathered them, when he was together with the mother, he was not Jewish. And a not Jewish man is not related to his own son, even though he's biologically related, his genetics go between the two of them, but halachically, a non-Jewish man who lives with a Jewish woman as a child, the child and the father are not related. Not related according to strict halacha, because a non-Jew cannot be related to a Jew, even though they're father and son from the biological perspective.
If he was Jewish?
I'm sorry?
What if he was Jewish? All we know is the mother wasn't Jewish.
No, I understand that. So that's the case. I'm sorry, I didn't finish my sentence. That's the case in which a father is not Jewish, and a mother is Jewish. Here's the flip side. The father was Jewish, because even the father was Jewish, and the mother is what? Is not Jewish at the time that they're together. So once again, there can be no relationship between that father, even if he's Jewish, and the children, even though they become Jewish later on. Thank you for the correction. It's the same principle. The Gemara pauses to consider what principle it is that voids their paternity. Okay? Now here comes a very critical footnote. I know it's, you know what, let's postpone the footnote until we have to read the Gemara. Footnote 4 is critical, but let's first see the Gemara itself. Amar Rava, Rava said, Ha da Amar Rabbanan ein av l'mitzri. Regarding that which the rabbi said that an Egyptian, doesn't mean Egyptian, it means any non-Jew, has no father after he converts. Now, I don't have footnote 5 here, I'm sorry. But what it probably says is that the same thing applies in this case. In that case, the father is a non-Jew, right? And the child is born to a Jewish mother from him. In our case, it's going to be the other way around, where the father may be Jewish, but the mother at the time when they're together is not Jewish, so it's the same principle. I don't have the footnote, but that's probably what it says. Okay? How do we know it? Lo teima mishum deshtufe bezima lo yada. Do not say it's because they are steeped in immorality, and thus it is not known who this biological father really is. Which would imply that if the father's identity were definitely known, then we would reckon with the child's paternity. Right? That would be if it was. It's not so. Why? Rather, even if it is known with certainty who the father is, we do not reckon with the child's paternity once the child converts. Okay, how do you know? For after all, in the case of two twin brothers, the tipa achas hoya v'nechlekol l'shtayim, where there's one drop of semen which divided into two, and thus no question, but that they share the same father means biologically. The katani say, for yet the latter clause of the Bryce states regarding twins who are conceived not in sanctity, but born in sanctity, lo choltin v'lo miyabmin. They perform neither chalitza yibam. Okay. That's the proof. The rest I have to leave to imagination. I'm not so good at copying. You see, things aren't even straight over here. When you do it myself, it's less than tzadi ches aman aleph in mesechta yibamos. Okay? So we see a klar. Now the question, of course, becomes, how does this affect or impact on our discussion? Here we have a situation, we say that you have a, let's review again the case. The case is a very important case. The case is, and it's relevant, of course, to our discussion. What happens? There are proskim who say like this. The status of what we call ach, okay? The status that we call ach, with respect to what we call eshes ach, they are clearly chayev kores, as we saw footnote 2. Why are they chayev kores? Why are they considered to be brothers? After all, let's think for a minute. At the moment that they were conceived in the womb of a what? Of a non-Jewish woman. And then they were born, presto, to a Jewish woman who had undergone conversion in the interim. So there are certain svarim that want to prove from here that they become relatives at the moment of their birth. At the moment of their birth. Even though that what they were conceived, they could not be related. Okay? On this basis, the suggestion is made that the birth mother is the mother. Because if these two individuals are considered to be brothers, it's impossible to consider them brothers from the moment of their conception, because everything was severed when the woman subsequently converted when they were in utero. And therefore, it must be said, there's no alternative but to say that they establish a kurva, a halachic state of a relative at the moment of their birth. This being the case, we can assume based on this Gemara that it's the birth mother who counts, and therefore, if there is a situation what we call IVF, it's the birth mother who was the halachic mother, and not the mother who was, if you will, the genetic mother, who was the, we'll call it the conception mother. Here we have the case. There's a conception mother and a birth mother. They didn't have IVF in the time of the Gemara. But they had a situation which is comparable. How so? She was conceived by, I'll just use the expression just to make it easy. She was conceived by Chrissy, and she was delivered by Chani. She changed the name and then changed the religion in the middle. So are they related or not? Mar says, yes, they are related. So if they are related, you see that Chani is a determining factor, not Chrissy. That indicates that if you have two women who play those separate roles, as we can have now with the modern technology, modernity, so you have the one who produces the egg, she is what we call the Chrissy, and the one who gives birth is considered the Chani. According to this understanding, she didn't have to have a conversion. The child of that would have to have a conversion because, no, take that back, will not have to have a conversion because it's Chani who's giving birth. The same way as Chani gives birth and thereby creates a relationship between her two children, Reuven and Shimon. So too, if Chani gives birth, the child is considered Jewish. Not Jewish, can be related. Atkan, the Raya, which is an abstract found in the same called the Imre Moshe, who was a Rosh Hashiva in Brisk. And my Rebbe, Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, Shalita, in Tchumen, Chelek Hei, tries to demonstrate from this Gemara that in fact it's the birth mother who is the mother and not the genetic mother. Yes, sir.
So a surrogate womb.
Right.
A non-Jewish surrogate womb.
Would be the other way around. You would then, according to this, you would require a gerus for a non-Jewish surrogate. I'm not sure. Maybe many people are sure. I'm not sure. I'm telling you, I'm not sure. But many people seem to be very sure in two different directions, they're sure. That means that's why I'm not sure. Yes, sir. Oh, excellent question. That we'll discuss. That's our second source. The answer is no. I mean, we'll discuss it. Patience. That's a very good.
The answer
good.
Is no. That's probably a good preview.
Well. So we'll have to see. If no, why no? So be patient. That's very important. Now, they are working, the Imre Moshe is working with an assumption. She spells out, we have a principle, a very important principle. Ger shen is gayer kikoton shenol adomi. What does that mean? Let's just translate it. One who converts is like someone who is born, reborn, born again. That kekot and shenola, that the person is born in the middle, right? As if a new life begins. That's a famous expression, Gerishin is Gai Kakotin Shinon Adomin. The fact that that principle is adduced to our situation is an intrinsic part of the proof. That explains why we have to assume that the relationship begins at the moment of birth and not from the moment of conception, which is relevant to our discussion that the birth mother is, in fact, the mother. However, if one looks in footnote 4, that's what I saw, footnote 4 is a rather lengthy footnote, so I beg your patience and indulgence as we go through it. Now, the principle at work here cannot be that a proselyte is like a newborn babe. All right, Gerish has got a conscious knowledge, dummy. For if we could apply that principle here, then they would not even be related to their mother. Au contraire, had we applied Gerish and Nizgaya, they would not be related to their mother. What does that mean? That means that motherhood itself does not create, the birth mother by giving birth does not create the relationship. Because if it would, then this principle, this statement would not be true.
That means that the birth of the mother does not apply to the baby.
Right. We don't say.
It's automatically.
For whatever reason, we don't apply the rule that Gerish and Nizgaya Kakon and Oladami with respect to these brothers. Now, since the Baraisa states clearly that the brothers are related maternally, just not paternally, it must be that the principle that a proselyte is like a newborn babe does not apply to children who were born in sanctity. So in this case of Leidosa B'Kedusha, we don't say Kakon and Oladami. Yet, the Baraisa rules that they are related through their mother only and not through their father. Clearly, there must be some other principle at work which voids the paternity of children who were conceived shalom b'kedusha, not in sanctity, and the Gemara seeks that principle. See Rashi. Rashi is the one who said that we don't apply the rule of Gerish and Nizgaya Kakotin Shinon Adami in this case. And therefore, there are those who take it and turn it the other way around. My Rebbe, Rabbi Zalman Nechemah, proved in this Gemara that it's the birth mother that counts because they're related to the mother, and there are others who take it punkt verkehrt. The only reason they're related to their mother is why? Because we do not say what? Gerish and Nizgaya Kakot and Shinon Adami, Rashi says. Had we said Gerish and Nizgaya Kakot and Shinon Adami, they wouldn't be related to their mother. Why? They're born from the same Jewish mother. You see a proof the other way around. That the birth mother is not the determinant. So they took the same Gemara, this is Talmudics, the same Talmudic passage that one great rabbi uses to prove one direction, that it's the birth mother that does count. Someone says, I'm sorry, you look in Rashi. You look in Rashi, that Rashi says you don't apply Gerish and Nizgaya Kakot and Shinon Adami. In this case, that implies the other way around, as we ourselves wrote when we read the first sentence of footnote 4, right? If we would apply that principle here, they would not be even related to their mother. That implies that just giving birth to a child does not establish a halachic relationship. Because if it would, what do you mean, who cares, Gerish and Nizgaya Kakot and Shinon Adami? What's the difference? Now they're born subsequent to that conversion process. So that's what some say exactly the opposite against Rabbi Zalman Nechemah. This is found, those want to look it up, in a sefer called Emek Halacha Chelek Beis, put out by our yeshiva, and the author is Rabbi Yeshua Ben Meir. He used to have a sister living in our community, Mrs. Pat. That was the name I remember from a long, long time ago. That was a long time ago. So her brother, she has two brothers, this is the younger brother, who said this in his beautiful article. It seems to me, I'll give you my take on this. You know, again, one great rabbi proves in this Gemara that it's the maternal, it's the birth mother is critical. That's what determines. Another rabbi proves from Rashi the exact reverse. And I tell you, I'm not so, I don't have the certainty principle. I'm not sure. After the Gemara and after Rashi, I'm still not sure. Let me explain where we're coming from. If, listen carefully, please. Our Gemara is trying to demonstrate a principle. What's the principle over here? The principle is that, and unfortunately, because I didn't put everything on my I apologize. In this Talmudic phrase, the Gemara's principle is, quote, Rachmona afkere lezare. It's not based on an uncertainty principle. But there's no halacha connection between a Jew and a non-Jew, father and son, or mother and son, because one, it's a halacha concept. And the Gemara says, based on the pasuk we said, v'zirmas susim zirmasam, pasuk in Tehillim, I believe. No. I think it's in Yecheskel somewhere. I forgot the pasuk is right now. I'm embarrassed. Somewhere in Tanakh, such a pasuk exists, and it demonstrates that there's no halacha connection. There's no paternity when there's a Jew and a non-Jew, father and son, mother and son. That just doesn't exist. So we want to prove that point. Listen very carefully. However, if Gersh and his Geyer is Kekotin Shanola Dami, that the relationship is severed when the mother converts, then we can't prove anything. We can't prove anything. Maybe there is a relationship between a non-Jewish father and a Jewish child, or a non-Jewish child and a Jewish father. Who knows? Maybe these relationships would exist. And the only reason they don't exist here, in the case that there's no Yivam and Chalitza, is for a different reason. What's that? Gerushin is Gaira Kekotin Shanola Dami. This is what would sever the relationship. So if you would accept the principle of Gerushin is Gaira Kekotin Shanola Dami, that when someone converts like born again and everything before is severed, this would take away our ability to demonstrate the principle, which is demonstrated from here, that Ein Av L'Nachri, there's no halachic relationship, that wouldn't be able to prove it. Because this is a unique case. Here's the case of Gerish and his Gayer, Kikotan Shinola Dami. So therefore, if there would be a relationship between the father and the son, when the father is a non-Jew and the mother is a Jew, or vice versa, there would be halacha of what? Chalitza and Yibum. And there's no Chalitza, there's no Yibum. We see there's no connection whatsoever. Again, had there been a connect, had the din been that Gerishin is Gaya Kotchen Oladami, it would obviate the Gemara's proof. That's why Rashi says that we don't apply the principle of Gerishin is Gaya Kotchen Oladami. You cannot make an inference. Rashi means to tell you that were it not for that, were what? If you would have said Gerishin is Gaya Kotchen Oladami, there could be no relationship established upon the subsequent birth to the same mother. Not true. Rashi only threw in this principle that we don't apply Gersh and Hizgayer, because otherwise, if you would apply Gersh and Hizgayer, there'd be no proof to what we call Rachmona Afker Elazare. But at the same time, what would be, Rashi makes no comment. So if you ask me, at the end of the day, this Gemara, although it seems to be a proof in one direction or another, is really a proof in neither direction. It doesn't prove that the birth mother is a mother, and it doesn't prove that the birth mother is not the mother. It proves neither, as a matter of fact. That's my understanding. That's a good question. Some suggest it's an ongoing process. It depends when she converted. Most authorities say it makes no difference. She converted, she was pregnant one day or 9 months. Most posts say it doesn't. It's not true. Now we go to our second source. Our second source, which was already raised by the audience, what in fact is the din? If forget about this case of two brothers, just one individual who was born from what we call the shotgun conversion, while the mother is pregnant. So that's the second source, which is in the top right. We read as follows. Rava said, Nochris mulberes shenis gaira. If a pregnant Gentile woman converted, b'na ein tsarech tvila, her son does not require immersion. 49. For the purpose of conversion, since the mother's immersion suffices for him as well, Rashi. The mother's, every word counts. The mother's conversion counts for the child as well. Asks the Gemara, am I in Torah Tvila? Now, if a child is not considered the thigh of his mother, that's a kind of Uba Yerech Imo, but a separate entity, why does he not require immersion after he is born? Footnote 50. Since the fetus is an entity distinct and separate from its mother, the immersion of its mother, of the mother's body, is not considered an immersion for its body, and as such, the child should require his own immersion after birth. Sichazanish. The Gemara precludes a possible answer. Vichy Taima Mishum de Rabbi Yitzchak. If you'll say that the child does not require immersion after the birth because of the dictum of Rabbi Yitzchak, what's that? Into the laws of what you call chatzitza for a mikvah. So let's see, footnote 51. I.e., he himself is deemed to have been already immersed while in his mother's womb, not by virtue of his mother's immersion, but because he was inside his mother when she immersed, and thus entered the mikveh himself. That's certainly true in point of fact. When the mother went to the mikveh when she was pregnant with him, he was obviously in the mikveh too, for sure. And although he did not actually come in contact with the water of the mikveh, the interposition of his mother's body between the water and himself does not invalidate his immersion in accordance with the dictum of Rabbi Yitzchak. Rubo, Makpid, all kinds of halachas of Hilchos Mikvah.
So that's the
step of Geirus. So Haida is saying, if this would be the case, it would be what? A separate Geirus. It's a double Geirus. The mother had a Geirus, and what?
The
and the child had a Geirus. Now this leads to a very interesting question.
No Kabbalah Smithis.
No Kabbalah Smithis is one question. The child never...
Mila.
Mila. What question are you asking? He's going to have a Mila, but what kind of Mila does he have to have? He's going to have a Mila. What kind of Mila will this boy have to have? Will that be a Mila of what? Of Geirus? Or a Mila like you and me? We all had Mila on the eighth day because we were born to a Jewish mother. That's your point. So which one is it? So in the Gemara, it's not completely clear. You get an impression, the Gemara says as follows, that if, listen very carefully, here's the critical point, here's my main point for tonight, if the mother's body would be deemed a chatzitza, an interposition as they call it, between the fetus and the water, what would the result be? The child would not be Jewish. Now this child emerges from the womb of a Jewish woman. This Gemara to me seems to be a decisive proof that what? It's not the birth mother. Giving birth, if you will, to a Jewish child is not a guarantee that the child will be Jewish. Because that's what the Gemara is telling us over here. That it so happens that the mother is not an interposition, not a chatzitza, for rules that the Gemara is going to discuss. But had the mother been an interposition of chatzitza, the child would not be Jewish. Why not? This child was born to a Jewish mother. So we see from here that birth to a Jewish mother does not suffice. Therefore, assuming, now, after Shia last week, someone said, well, maybe there are no mothers, maybe there are two mothers. All this is, again, to me, a little bit science fiction. What, no mothers, two mothers. Where I came from is one mother. So, well, who is the one mother? So it seems to me that the birth mother is not the halachic mother, because after all, we see in the Gemara that had there been a birth to a Jewish mother, it would not suffice in and of itself to make this child Jewish. So if there's only one mother, and it's not the birth mother, it has to be the genetic mother. So that's my opinion, not for sure, far from being for sure, that's really the genetic mother, yes.
How do you rectify that with the previous Gemara, however?
No, very simple. Because Rashi taught us, you don't say Gerish and Isgarika Conchinolodom. That's exactly the point. So they related straight through. Oh. Now, hold on. The Ramban, however, says, listen to me carefully. The Ramban in Masechta Yevamos Daf Mem Zayin says that when this boy is born and has to have a bris, you're not going to believe this now, it's a bris of a convert. Whoa. That's unbelievable. A bris of a convert. Not a bris, an eighth day bris, right? A bris of a convert. It's halacha l'maisa. You don't have to wait 8 days. It's like a different kind of a bracha. It's a whole, not Dorcha Shabbos, a whole amazing, that's an amazing, amazing consequence. Amazing. Not only that, he proves from here a chiddush nifle menor ad mod. When we learned Hilchos Geiris here, yes, the Rabban says, what will happen when a female converts, all you need is immersion. That's it. When a male converts, you need two things. What are the two things? Immersion and what else? Bris. What if you invert the order? We all know you're first supposed to have the bris, then you have to have the immersion. What if you have the immersion first and then the bris? What are you saying? Good or no good? No good. That's what I would have said. Ramban said it's good. You know how he knows? From our case. Our case. They had the immersion. This boy had an immersion in his mother's stomach. And the bris, after he's born, there you go. The Ramban proves from here that the immersion that can precede the bris, not ideally, but post facto, it would be good.
The Raya is from the Gemara itself. The Gemara says, does he need tefila? What does he need tefila for if he's a yid?
Hold on. Slow. We have to see what the conclusion is. Slowly. The truth is that because of this big problem, there are certainly a group of Rosh Yeshivas who have what we call classical yeshiva shatara. Yeshiva shatara is very good. Very, very good. And the question, of course, is do we pass in that way? Some of the we learn in the yeshivas is in the world, the ivory tower of the yeshiva, not only is la halacha. So those who want to look it up could either look in the chedushim of Rav Naftali Trupp in Ksuba Staf Yud Aleph Amad Aleph, if that's where the sugya comes up a little bit, or in Rabbi Bleich's book. He has four pages about this yeshiva shatara. And he puts it in such beautiful English. It's like, wow. You know, it's just incredible how well presented it is over here. And he quotes a position which he cites from Rabbi Sternbuch. And the thesis advanced by Rabbi Sternbuch is in postulating two types of conversion is remarkably similar to that expounded by Rabbi Naftali Trupp in the Shiuri Granat Ketubot 11a. This sugya. So you also want to look it up. It says an amazing, amazing thing. Look, come on. We know that this child is born Jewish. There's no escaping it. He's born Jewish. You can't tell me he's born not Jewish. It's impossible. He's certainly born, and we'll see soon proofs. He's certainly born Jewish. Despite the fact that he's born Jewish, he still requires, according to the Ramban, a ritual circumcision to give him the second level known as Kedushas Yisrael. There is what we'll call Am Yisrael and Kedushas Yisrael. That's pretty yeshivish. It's very dinim. There's the Jewish people, and then there's the sanctity of being Jewish. Whoa. So he requires this additional conversion for the sanctity of being Jewish, and that requires a milah. Were it not for the fact that the mother is not an interposition of chatzitza, what would he require? A second tefillah! A second tefillah! In order to have this, what we call the status of Yisrael. Even though he's the Yisrael from birth.
What does that mean?
What I mean? They're saying that the fact that he's born to a Jewish mother gives him a status of being Jewish, but not totally Jewish. Can you be a little bit pregnant? Can you be a little bit Jewish? The first answer is no. The second answer is yes. Right? So that means that you can have a status of being partially Jewish. That would have existed, they say, merely by virtue of the fact that the child is born to a Jewish mother. They're the ones who claim that it's the birth that counts. That status would have been accorded to this child in any event. But were it not for the fact that the mother is not a chatzitza, would require a new milah and a new tefillah to give him the full status of a Jew. Now that the mother is not a chatzitza, all he needs to give him the status of a full Jewishness is a milah and not a tefillah. But the milah could be a milah of quasi-conversion. This is incredible. This being the case, if this is true, then my proof, I call it my proof, then my proof from the Gemara here that it's really the birth mother is not a mother is refuted. Because now I say the birth mother really is a mother. If the birth mother is a mother, so So the question becomes, who cares if the mother would be an interposition of chatzitza? Here's the answer. That the fact that he needs a milah afterwards, and the Ramban calls it a milah of conversion, even though it can't be that the child is really born Jewish, we'll prove soon, must be at two levels. There's basic Judaism, to be basically Jewish, and then to have the greater sanctity of being Jewish. And the basic being Jewish is conferred upon the child because he's born to a Jewish mother, because a Jewish mother creates a Jewish child just by giving birth to him. And whatever happens later on, in point of fact, milah, and in theory, a second tvila, if the mother would be a chatzitza, that's only to give him the second level of Kedushas Yisrael. All this is, to me, wild. Wild! I came from, I mean, halacha, I know all the funny shittas. I've said shiur about all the funny shittas. But the halacha, either you're Jewish or you're not Jewish. I don't understand this kind of business of halfway. Again, not that there isn't Torah. I have my own Kedusha Torah on this sugya. But that's Chiddush HaTorah. But La Halacha, it seems to me, it's not really what carries the day. So the question, of course, becomes...
In the Chiddush HaTorah, what are the Nafkaminas?
Here, you didn't have the Nafkamina. You can't... I wanted a proof from this Gemara that having given birth to a child does not create the Jewishness of the child. And with this Chiddush HaTorah, my proof is refuted. Yeah.
If you have such a child born and then doesn't get that second...
Slowly. So the Rajba says on that same daf Mem Zayinim at Beis that our Gemara, catch this now, read it again, top right. Nochiz Musberish and Isgaya, if a pregnant gentleman converted, Benoi and Sarah Tviler, her son does not require immersion. We're not talking about a son. We're talking about a daughter. Now, they use the word Benoi, Rajba says no, it means a daughter. And had it been a son, what would you require? A mila and a tvila. Whoa. Oh. That's unbelievable. That's incredible. The Gemara we learned before, right here, Tzadi Chesem and Aleph, proves conclusively that the child which comes from a woman who converted with him in utero is Jewish from birth. Because it's related to his brother, Chiyuv Kares. If this whole Torah, if the Rashba is right, that the it's only talking about a daughter, but somehow a son wouldn't be considered Jewish from the beginning, it would be against the Gemara that we started with. This Gemara, it's a very difficult Rashba, very difficult.
Why is the Mechalik between a daughter and a son?
No, because the daughter, let's say you have to have the Mila before the Tevila. So therefore, in the case of the son who's missing a Mila, now they could probably do it in utero. Okay, do it with the laparoscopically. They'll maybe do a bris mila on the embryo. Yeah, who knows what they could do today? I don't think it'd be good, but that's maybe for the next Gilgal. In another 10 years, we talk about these topics. They'll be more advanced. We can maybe discuss it. But there's another proof. I ask you a question. Do you think this proof is going to be conclusive? We have a law called pinyon aben. Everyone know what a pinyon aben is? It's clear that a pinyon aben is a peter rechem, right, who was born Jewish to a Jewish mother. The Gemara says in this kind of a case of a rosso shalom b'kdusha, v'edosa b'kdusha, is a chiyuv of pinyon aben. That proves to me, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that this child is born Jewish, right? It's not as half here, half there, it's sons, daughters, the child is born Jewish. But of course, if the child is born Jewish, we don't understand what the Ramban and the Rashba are saying. We're not pushing aside some 21st century Achron. The Ramban and the Rashba, cool, cold, the Ram Kedoshim. How could they say what they said? They knew Bukharis. They learned Bukharis. Rabbi wrote a whole sefer on Bukharis. They knew this. In their sleep, they knew it. So how can the Ramban say what he said when it seems to be contravened by an explicit Gemara in Bukharis? And our Gemara in Yevamos, 20 blot later, Tzadiches, is it Ayin Ches, is it Tzadiches? How can it be? Yeah.
Just looking at the flow of the Gemara, it says, if she converted, her son does not need tefillah. Then they tried to bring a proof from Rabbi Yitzhak, which apparently they're going to reject.
At the end of the day, I'm sorry, I didn't get to know. The whole thing is, the mother's body is not a chatzitza, bottom line.
It's not a chatzitza.
Not a chatzitza.
And they say that is the reason?
That's correct. Because the mother is not a chatzitza. That's the conclusion of the Gemara. Not a chatzitza. Hayne revise, hold this. You look it up. It goes up to Amin Beis. Okay, when I do cutting and pasting, you know it's a bad job. So I apologize for that. Maybe we'll get bigger experts to do it for the subsequent shiur. Okay. So let me give you the answer. It's not my answer. It's not mine. A much greater, much greater, Goyen, Tzaddik of the last century, said the answer. And I think he's the correct answer, Emes Lamita. It's a sefer called the Kehilas Yaakov. Who wrote the Kehilas Yaakov? The Stipler. The Stipler. Those know you don't know the name. Okay. A lot of Kehilas. The Kehilas Yaakov writes in Masechta Yevamos Siman Lamed Vav. At this Gemara, listen carefully. This Gemara. Remember, you saw this already a little bit in the notes over here. Now, line 4. If a child does not consider the thigh of his mother, but a separate entity. So the Stipler says that the Gemara here is going according to the opinion which maintains Uber Lav Yerech Ima. According to that opinion, the child requires a subsequent Mila of Geiris, as the Ramban said. Maybe even a subsequent tevila, if it's a male, the way the Rashba said. Fine. However, if this is true, that our Gemara is going according to the opinion, Ubalav Yerechimo, it must be that the Psak Halacha is, forgive me, Uber Yerechimo, as we see from Bechoros, and we see from Easter Ashes. Ah! This, I believe, is the best answer. The Ramban and the Rashba are explaining Pshat in this Gemara based upon the Gemara's assumption. Uba lav yerechimo. They were fully aware of the Gemara 20 blot later. They're fully aware of the Gemara Masechta Bechoros. That's against them. Sure, that goes according to the opinion which must be normative. Must be. The what? Uber is yerechimo. And if Uber is yerechimo, then the child is a part of the mother and is absolutely born Jewish. Why? Why? Because the mother is not a chatzitza. Had the mother been a chatzitza, then it doesn't matter, yerech, not yerech, the child would not have been considered to be born Jewish. And therefore that goes back to my proof, that what? That at least this Gemara proves, at least this Gemara goes according to my love, yerech imo, proves that what? That the giving birth to the child in and of itself does not create Jewishness.
And the difference between male and female regarding the tefillah,
right,
is because
because you have to, according to the Rashba, right. And the Rabban says, no, the tefillah counts, but you can have the tefillah before the meal. It's a subsequent detail. Comes out like this. According to the Ramban, there's really no proof from this Gemara over here conclusively, because this Gemara goes, if you hold what? Uber lav yerechimo. Maybe you'll say, if Uber lav yerechimo, then the birth itself does not create the relationship. Maybe you can argue at least. Not saying it makes that much sense, but you could argue that if Uber is yerechimo, then the birth itself would create the status of Jewishness based upon birth alone. Maybe. We have no proof to that thesis. But according to the other Rishonim, who don't go and buy into this Ramban and Rashbosh theory, that this should be dependent upon that with the Stipler's great lumbus. They say, no, the child is born Jewish according to everybody. But why? Only because it's not considered to be a chatzitza. So we see, if this is true, we see from here, not enough to give birth to the child to create the status of being Jewish. That being the case, I go back to my original point, that since we were assuming intuitively there's only one mother to the child, not no mother and not two mothers, and giving birth to the child does not in and of itself create motherhood, then it stands to reason, as far as I can see, that this genetic mother is considered the halachic mother. The halachic mother. Now, there's much more to be said. If you will look again in Rabbi Bleich, he has a long, long piece in his discussion on page 246, it quotes a Tosis in Masechta Ksubis on Daf Yud Aleph. What happens if a woman converts and gives birth to a Jewish child and she dies? Who inherits her? Who inherits her?
That is, if the father is not Jewish.
No. Carries the
woman. I don't know if it matters. Who inherits her? Who inherits her? Who inherits her?
Who inherits the mother that died? The child that you gave her?
So Tosa suggests that I'll read it to what he says. To the effect that the fetus of a pregnant woman who undergoes conversion is itself a convert, but nevertheless inherits its mother's estate. Wow. So the question becomes, doesn't this prove that the birth itself is determinant? Right? He is working with an assumption, as he spells out specifically, that Gershon is Geyer, Kikon Shinoladoy. But we just proved before from the Rashi that we don't say it in this kind of a case. So once again, we have no proof positive that it's based upon this idea of the birth being creating motherhood. So I go back to what I said at the beginning of the Shir, that my personal view is that the birth cannot create motherhood, and therefore I'm leaning in the direction that it's really the genetic mother that's the true halachic mother. And I say, Mr. Shabbos, you're right, it goes in both directions. Pashas, it goes both ways. If what I'm saying would say that basically, I have to be honest with you, it's mostly bad news, my psak. It's mostly bad news, I have to be honest with you, it's mostly bad news. Because donor eggs in our community are much more common than surrogacy. I'm just giving you statistics. So if it's a donor egg from a non-Jewish donor, in my view, the child is not Jewish, Mikaradin, has to have a conversion. If it's a girl, she cannot marry a Kohen. And here's unfortunately, if you want to be technical, the father really hasn't fulfilled Pururvu, technically. Although he has a genetic child, but since the child is not born Jewish, in effect, so doesn't have that, the mitzvah. He may have the satisfaction of having a child that looks like him, but in strict halacha, probably is not considered having fulfilled the mitzvah of pru revu. It's for this reason, among others.
This is with donor eggs.
Yeah, it's for this reason, among others, that personally, if they're going to use donor, now obviously we try if they have the IVF to use the mother's egg, and it works many times. I'm telling you, I know from facts. Many couples, they couldn't have a child regularly. They had a child with IVF from the mother's eggs. Just something wasn't working in the natural process. He was okay, she was okay. It just wasn't working. But if you have to have a donor, I am in the minority, which recommends to have a donor egg from a Jewish person. That's radical. Because in the rabbinic establishment, I'm an iconoclast almost. Because everyone says, how can you do such a thing? We're afraid that what? That there'll be a brother and sister will get married. There was a whole tumult in England not that long ago with one of these cases. You read about it? All the tabloids were screaming these headlines. There was almost a brother married a sister based on some kind of assisted reproduction. You're right. It's certainly a very serious problem. But like other problems, I believe that we can deal with them. We can deal with them. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you a personal story. It's just how stories, even though sort of on tape, but okay, this is not, it's not a bad personal story, it's just a personal story. One of my Talmidim, and I'll fast forward, who ended up being my Mechutin, visited us in Camp Marasha, in the Kollel, because his son was there, later my son-in-law. I think it was the summer of 2004, that's my recollection, over 5 years ago, that's what I recall. He was visiting, I think maybe he had one or two sons, and he came for Shabbos. And at that time, there was a big spread in the, one of the weekend editions of the Israeli newspapers about this idea of donor eggs for hire, which may be illegal in America, maybe not illegal in Israel. It's like, oh, the legalities are very complex. But there were those who wanted to have donor eggs in Jewish women. And there was a whole discussion of who they are and how they do it and where they do it and how they do it. And this particular Mechutin is a IVF specialist in Canada. And he was very upset about this commercialization of the process. And he told me at the time, and he wrote me a letter, or sent me something after we met. You have to be careful whatever. You never know who your Mechutin's going to be. You have to always be careful wherever you are. You don't know. I was very polite, and of course I listened to him. You know. I know him from he was a Mashiach way over 30 years ago. But, you know, it was very, you know. And we had this back and forth on this very, very issue. And I told him that in contrast with some of the other rabbis, I believe in using a donor egg from a Jewish person, because only then could we have a guarantee that the child is Jewish. If it's a girl, she can marry a Kohen. That the father, in my view anyway, has fulfilled Pru Revu, even though it's done artificially. Maybe we'll get to that in the subsequent shiur, whether that's really true. But we assume that it is true. We spoke already, if you remember, in the opposite case of artificial insemination based upon the famous story of Ben Sira and then the Rabbeinu Peretz, that there could be fatherhood in that kind of a case. I think there can be fatherhood in this kind of a case as well, la halacha. And how do you avoid the problem of brother marrying a sister? You get some information about the mother, the donor, that will enable you to be careful down the road. What information? So, for example, a birthday. They have to be anonymous. I think it's very good it should be anonymous. I've had cases where people ask me, can I donate eggs for my daughter? My daughter has no eggs. I want to donate eggs. Now they can freeze eggs. They're starting, just starting to freeze eggs. I'm 40 years old. I still have eggs. I'll donate my egg and freeze it. So my daughter, who has a thing called Turner syndrome, which has no eggs, will be able to have a child in 20 years from now. I said to this lady, I said, you can't do this. Why not? You can't do it. What the halacha would say about it, I don't know. I can't figure it out. It's just not a good idea. For reasons that I think that you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out. It's just not good. We're much better off with anonymity. But even in anonymity, you can know certain basic facts to prevent a michshol of a brother marrying a sister. You know that the donor of the egg was born on January 1st. Okay? So now you have a child. Child wants to get married 20 years later. So the parents, hopefully at least one of them will be alive, hopefully they'll both be alive, will say, oh, who's the, well, I'm going out with a nice guy, a nice girl. Oh yeah, what's the shviga's birthday? I just went out one date. Ask him or her what the mother's birthday is. January 1st, that's a good idea. Maybe we should, the other fish in the sea. You know, you don't have to explain why. But it's only one in 365, you have that problem. So, you know, it's not you're not cutting out too many, you know, percentage-wise. Think of this nation. That's what they do in certain of the clinics here in Brooklyn and in Yerushalayim. Machon Pua, I believe, works that way. And this is what I feel it should be.
Huh?
Again, there's new technology every day. You know, sometimes you don't want to know too much. Typically, they will tell you certain things about the donor. They have to, according to American law, have to. The race, even though we don't believe in racism, but you don't want to have a black child to a white mother or the reverse. They're going to tell you the race, and they should tell you if yes, the religion, etc. Now, within the Jewish donors, not every Jewish woman wants to donate an egg. It's first of all, you know, it's not as easy as sperm donation. You understand that this is a ritual procedure. It's very complicated. It's much more difficult, etc. But it is invasive. Who wants to do it? So they now there is a dispute. What if a married woman donates an egg? Does that create any halachic problems of mamzerus? Because she's a married woman. And while she's married to Reuven, Shimon is having a child with her egg. So Rabbi Freeman says, no way this creates a problem with mamzerus. I happen to agree with you. I agree with you. Maybe we'll discuss that next time. We'll talk about artificial insemination. But there are some who still are nervous about it. So we try to find single women. Why not? I mean, if you can find a single woman. Matov. The reality is, not too many people want to do this. Again, it's an invasive process. I was successful with one Talmud in the United States to find a Jewish, he found a Jewish woman to donate an egg. And everything worked out, Baruch Hashem, in the United States. I think she was a Jewish woman. She had her own children already. I think she was even divorced. They make some money on the deal. So it had Allah Milas. She wasn't even married at the time. Allah Milas. But it's hard to find. There are two groups where they find, and that's what's discussed in that article, where they find the women who are doing it primarily for the money. One is Sephardim, and one is Russians. Now, just without going into ethnicity, those are the groups that in Eretz Yisrael presently, that again, by and large, you find a greater need for money. That's just the reality. That's just, they're building themselves up gradually. Now, it's hard for me to say what of the two which is preferred. If it's an Ashkenazi couple and the woman is Sephardic, it could have interesting ramifications in terms of how the child will look. Russians are Ashkenazim, but we're not completely sure if they're really Jewish. That's the problem. A significant portion of the Russian population that's walking around as Jewish in Eretz Yisrael is not. This is well known. What the percentage is, they estimate a third. It's a high estimate. That there may be certain conversions, and those conversions themselves are problematic. Not the topic for today. Maybe conversion in the modern era should also be a topic. As halacha engages in modernity, things change. We'll talk about that in a different shir. So therefore, it seems to me that you should try to find someone whose first priority, someone who's Jewish, and you know for sure they're Jewish, so you don't have to have any conditional conversions, and we worry about Ashkenaz and Sephard later. The Sephardi women are absolutely Jewish. There's almost no intermarriage in those countries. Be 100%, nothing 100%. We assume that she's really Jewish. It might be the best way to go in such a circumstance. We've spoken a little bit tonight about a difficult topic. It is a painful one, because not being able to have children of your own, the father and the mother with their own genetic material, is obviously not ideal. Obviously, even IVF from father and mother is not an ideal, but at least there, it's a child of both parents genetically, and certainly we assume halakhically. Nonetheless, it is a breakthrough of modernity, which enables women to have children that they couldn't have a generation ago. And technology and modernity are good when they are used to enable mitzvahs to be performed. That's going to be our basic thesis. We engage modernity, we embrace modernity when it enables us to fulfill mitzvahs. We reject modernity when it tempts us to do averus. Of course, I have to be honest with you, and I'll end with this. There are some poskim who think that everything we spoke about today is one big avera. One big avera. You have no right to do it, it's artificial, and it's not right, and it's immoral, and a hin, and a hair, and a who, a whole series of considerations. And I do not take these considerations lightly. As you know, we spoke last week about certain broad definitions of halacha. And I share a broad definition of halacha. And therefore, these rabbis who have taken that license to prohibit this entire process, I believe that they are entitled to their opinion for sure. Even some of those who have given opinions post facto as to what the nature of the child is, Jewish or not, may not advocate it ab initio, lechatchila. They think it shouldn't be done. However, my view of the halacha, even in its wider understanding, that these procedures are appropriate, again, in a situation in which the couple cannot procreate in the normal fashion, and we should try to help individuals to fulfill this mitzvah, both for the sake of the mitzvah and for the sake of their personal fulfillment as much as we can. We'll stop here. Next week, I'm going to double feature upstairs. It's starting at 7:15, ending at 8:15 before the Malava Malka down here for the ladies. And it's possible that the second half will be a guest speaker, Rabbi Zev Leff, international renown, but I'm not 100% sure if he's coming, so we'll let you know before Shabbos.